Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, March 20th, 2015. On today's podcast, we're going to discuss the Israeli elections held last Tuesday, March 17th. Who won the election? What does it mean for Israel and for the United States? The Israeli election process involves the winner forming a ruling coalition. The election only starts the process of coalition building. There were 25 parties on the ballot, and a party must get at least 3.5% to enter the 120-seat Knesset. So if one party could win 61 seats, it could rule the Knesset and would not be forced to build a coalition, but no party has ever won 61 seats. So there are rounds of negotiating after the election before a government is finally formed. The two main parties were Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing Likud party and Isaac Herzog's left-wing Zionist Union party. Right-wing and left-wing, that's the labels the media assigns to those two parties. Mr. Netanyahu told the Jerusalem Post in an interview that these elections are critical and that a strong and responsible leader was needed to navigate the ship to a safe place. He mentioned what he called a dangerous agreement with Iran and said under his leadership, the government would not contribute to that happening. He said there would be no two-state solution, no Palestinian state. But elections and campaigning are no place for blunt face-to-face truth-telling. So after the election, he said he wants a sustainable, peaceful two-state solution. Obviously, he takes this position to help with coalition building and to appease the Obama administration. So who knows what he actually believes and what he will actually do. Mr. Netanyahu lauded his economic program and the free things his party has provided to the people of Israel. I might add that some of those things are free because so much of their defense burden is borne by U.S. taxpayers. But he continued on. The most important point he made was his ability and willingness to stand strong for Israel in the face of international pressure. Mr. Herzog, however, said he would carry out a program of social reform, lower housing prices, lower cost of living, health and education, reduction of poverty and state care for the welfare of each and every Israeli citizen. He said that under his leadership, Israel would fight its enemies and would not fight its friends. He would restore relations and strengthen ties with the United States. He would promote regional efforts to demilitarize and rebuild Gaza. He would jumpstart the peace process with the Palestinians. He favors the Palestinian state solution. So those were the candidates and what they said they would do if they were elected. But, of course, there was a third party which interjected itself into the Israeli elections, and that third party was the administration of Barack Hussein Obama, which sent its bright minds of Obama's election victories to Israel to work for the defeat of Mr. Netanyahu and the victory of Mr. Herzog. Before the election, President Obama said he believed the next Israeli government would support a two-state solution. American presidents interfering in the Israeli elections, that's not unprecedented. In June 1996, Bill Clinton, frustrated with Mr. Netanyahu's refusal to do his bidding, sent his campaign strategist James Carville and Stanley Greenberg to help steer the Labor Party to victory over Mr. Netanyahu. But as happens in almost everything President Obama does, except, of course, the critically important act of being elected and reelected, he failed in this attempt. He failed and he was embarrassed, or maybe not. Maybe he is not capable of embarrassment. When Israelis woke up March 18th, they got the news that despite what the exit poll said, Mr. Netanyahu's Likud party won 29 seats, Mr. Herzog's Zionist Union party 24, The makeup of Israel's next coalition government, as I said before, will depend on negotiations with leaders who seek concessions in return for their support. So, what result from all this? It looks like the nationalist bent to the Israeli government will continue. Efforts to form a Palestinian state will continue to be opposed by the Israeli government, maybe, most likely. President Obama, never gracious in victory or defeat, refused to congratulate Mr. Netanyahu, thus embarrassing the United States, but not himself, because, as we said, he's no longer capable of that. The piles of money, allied efforts, expensive technology, and organizing did not prevail over Mr. Netanyahu. He tried, but he failed. But that was not enough for Mr. Obama. No, his government now says that the U.S. government might impose sanctions on Israel or allow Israel to be tried in the International Criminal Court. He might also stop U.S. opposition to growing European pressure to impose sanctions on Israel. The thing Israel seems to impose the most is the U.S. backing away from opposition to Hamas efforts to join the International Criminal Court, which already contains the Palestinian Authority. They'll join April 1st. Under U.S. law, any Palestinian bid to bring war crimes charges against Israel will automatically sever the annual $400 million in aid the U.S. gives the Palestinian Authority, but Obama could, of course, undoubtedly find money to give them some way. You believe that, folks? We give the Palestinian Authority $400 million a year in addition to the billions that we give Israel. The U.S. has let it be known that the decades of U.S. opposition to U.N. pressure on Israel are now over. Obama goes to the UN to bring pressure on Israel and to get what he wants in Iran because he wants to circumvent Congress. Meanwhile, nuclear negotiations with Iran move on. We'll see how the U.S. does with its new friend, Iran. Finally, folks, words fail me. They really do. We have no friends left anywhere, it seems. And why should we with this administration? It smells like trouble to me, folks. At least that's the way I see it. Until next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.